I do sometimes. And
what do you eat when you roll up at a McDonald's? What is Donald Trump order?
That fish and light sometimes. The Big Macs are great. Quarter pounder with cheese. It's great stuff.
It's episode 33. It's episode 33. I'm Will Meneker, joined by always Felix Biederman.
Hey, everybody.
Matt Christman.
Hello, got Matt.
And joining us today, I'm super excited because we have an awesome slate of stories. It's Libby Watson, everybody.
Hello.
You know Libby.
Oh, she's
going to
do a fun accent too as a joke? That's cool.
I thought about trying to do my terrible American accent, but it's really so painful.
Yeah, barbecue
do
it. Food.
Do it.
Barbecue
yeah,
food.
Well, yeah, barbecue food is really all it is.
My culture, not your costume.
I'll have a cheeky Nando and a barbecue food.
I'm sure if you were listening to us, Libby needs no introduction. You know her from Twitter, but she comes to us all the way from the town of Tesco's in the UK.
That's where I was born. I was born in a Tesco's.
That's beautiful.
Started from the bottom, now we're here.
How could the orphan, what is it? The like bastard orphan son of a Tesco?
Bastard child of a Tesco.
No, but like I said, we're super psyched to have you here, and I think we should hit the ground running. There are so many, this has been such a good news week so far. There's been so many awesome stories, and
it's been rich with epic fail.
I hope we're gonna have time to get to all of them. But again, before we get started, I just need to check in. Matt Christman, where are you coming to us from on your epic spiritual quest / road trip / indie movie?
Well, I'm coming to you from Salt Lake City.
Ooh,
I just got back from Temple Square. I saw Joseph Smith's Death Mask.
How'd he look?
He looked dead, man. He looked really fucking dead. Saw some awesome... I saw Kolob. I saw a painting of Kolob, which we love to talk about. I saw Jesus next to Kolob, the planet he's from. That was pretty cool. I got to see the temple. I saw the temple itself. Yeah.
Matt seeing Kolob like in Salt Lake City was kind of just like taking a tour of a timeshare that you're later gonna buy into. Like, we're all going to Kolob. We're all
yes,
definitely getting
to heaven. We will all end up in Kolob.
Yeah, we are.
Shapo will reign eternal in heaven. Yes. We're gonna be broadcasting podcasts into infinity.
We're getting our own fucking galaxy.
You guys can hear this.
The temple itself, you can't go in it if you're not Mormon. You have to show them a card to prove you're Mormon to get into the temple.
It's literally a card. You have to be a card-carrying Mormon.
Yeah. You have to be a literal card-carrying Mormon to get into the temple. And it's it's an alienating, unpleasant building.
Is there
it looks like a Disney castle.
For fake Mormon IDs? IDs you can use to not buy alcohol.
Mormon voter fraud.
Yeah, I got, you know, all my friends are peer pressuring me to drink at this party, and I don't want to do it because I got a big test tomorrow. Can I get a card that says I'm a Mormon so they'll stop hassling me?
What if you're Jewish? Like, isn't that, in the game, the Halo games, like the Master Race was called the Forerunners, and they invented all these ships and plasma rifles, and that's kind of what Jews are to Mormons. Like, if I just went in there, and I took out my dick, and I was like, guys, I'm cut. My moil was a goyle. And they're just like, all right, you have
that doesn't prove anything. I'm circumcised too, and I'm not Jewish.
But I have like a little, I have a Hebrew letter carved into the underside of my. That's actually how they know this.
All I gotta say is, dicks out for Joseph Smith, everybody.
Well, I was thinking that he is the Harambe of the 19th century, in that his death created a religious movement, which is what will happen with Harambe.
Well, you know what, guys? I just want to say, it's easy to make fun of Mormons and their beliefs, but you know what? They're very clean, they're very efficient, they're ruthlessly efficient, you might say, and provide excellent security and intelligence. And even though they do not drink or gamble themselves, provide excellent security for a casino venture.
Yeah, absolutely. They'll hook you up with all the clean young blood that they can find, and if you want them to help you assassinate Bobby Kennedy, they're on that shit too.
Allegedly, come on.
Allegedly,
Iron Bob Mayhew, Google him. Well, they did that a lot. I was in the gift shop, and they have a bunch of action figures for the different figures from the Book of Mormon, and like a lot of the stuff in the Book of Mormon just sounds like things that were just made up. Like there's a guy named Mosiah. M-O-S-I-A. And like there's a guy called Nephi and Moroni, the angel Moroni. I mean, it just sounds like things that the guy, it's like Kaiser Soze, he's looking at the wall and there's a bunch of, and he's just making
Kobayashi.
Mormonism is Halo though. It's exactly like Halo. Joseph Smith was Master Chief. The black people are the Flood. Jews are the Covenant.
Okay, we can't go down this rabbit hole and expect to have any time to talk about anything else. So I want to segue from Joseph Smith to another prophet, another guy whose time has come, and his name is Stephen Bannon. I'm referring to now. This is a story that broke just today. That Donald Trump has now gotten rid of his old campaign manager and replaced him with this guy, Stephen Bannon, who is the guy who's been running Breitbart.com since Andrew was called away.
Andrew is up in heaven right now with Lucky Luciano, with Bugsy Siegel, all the classy gangsters that pulled up their pants. They're all like playing. And Tony's up there. T is up there. Ralph Cifaretto is in hell, but they're all playing a big card game right now.
I have to say that it is the trajectory here is really amazing. So he starts off with Lewandowski, who's a longtime political operative, close to him. They fire him and bring in Manafort, who's like an old vampire of D.C. who knows where all the bodies are buried and all that stuff. Old school political operator. Now they're bringing in some dickhead from Breitbart. I mean, in 2 weeks, like, Ricky Vaughn is going to be the campaign guy. Or, like Nazi, you know, like Pepe Himmler 48 is going to be a campaign manager.
I want to read a little bit from the Washington Post story about, it says, the headline is, Trump reshuffles staff in his own image. And the idea, it's like the subtext here is that Trump is dying and wants to be surrounded by loved ones in his last days. But it says, Bannon, in phone calls and meetings, has been earning Trump for months to mount a fall campaign that makes Republican donors and officials comfortable. Instead, Bannon has been telling Trump to run more fully as an outsider and unabashed nationalist. Trump had listened intensely to Bannon and agreed with him, believing that voters will ultimately want a presidential candidate who represents disruption more than a candidate with polished appeal. I want to win.
So he's Uber for racism. That's wicked.
I want to win, Trump told the Wall Street Journal. That's why I'm bringing on fantastic people who know how to win and love to win. And by
so
that,
once again, it's a drill tweet. This whole Trump campaign has been a series of drill tweets, and this one is where it's psychiatrist. Your problem is that you're perfect and smart, and everyone is jealous of your good posts, and that makes you rightfully upset. Me, I agree. With Bannon and Trump in there instead.
A lot of people have been criticizing Trump. Not me. If you have been paying attention to the demographics, what demographic has Trump been losing? Suburban whites. What is the best movie according to Suburban Whites? It's 8 Mile. What happened in 8 Mile? Eminem, like, kept, B Rabbit, kept getting owned. And they're like, you're a choke artist, your campaign manager took money from you out of COVID. Corey Lewandowski, the truth said he was going to kill McKay Coppins. And then he like came back and he beat the free world, which represents the globalists, which represents Hillary Clinton. And that's sort of what's going on in the campaign. Like, Trump just hired D12. The alt-right is D12. It's going to be like Trump, Mike Cernovich is like Mekhi Phifer in the movie, except for, you know, like a key difference that I think we can all assume. But anyway, he's going to give Trump the gorilla mindset. Trump is going to have like alpha gorilla posture. He's going to be doing workouts that improve his alpha gorilla posture. He's
eating more game meats.
Yeah,
and
not,
taking up smoking.
Not eating red meat, not coming. Trump is not. You look at what. You ask me, what is the biggest problem with Trump's campaign? He's been coming too much. He didn't come at all during the primaries. He's just been like jacking off and fucking the entire general election, and it shows. He's gonna bring that alpha energy.
And, and does that mean that Milo is Cheddar Bob?
Milo is Cheddar Bob. He shot himself in the ass with his own gun.
So I live in DC, so I'm gonna need you guys to translate all of that into Game of Thrones so that I can understand it.
This is sort of like in the Washington Post article. It describes how Trump was sort of goaded into doing this by other rich people. Probably people richer than him at a fundraiser held at the house, the Hamptons home of Woody Johnson, where he was approached by a woman named Rebecca Mercer, who is the daughter of a hedge fund titan named Robert Mercer, who basically said he looks like a pussy because his advisors have been taming his personality. And then he was like, I can't have this. Get me Steve Bannon. Get me the band man.
That's really interesting because Robert Mercer was a big Cruz guy before he gave a lot of money to the Cruz campaign. So it's interesting to go from like not being able to handle the full Trump train to, yeah, fuck it, why not?
Well, this is his daughter, Rebecca. So maybe was onto Cruz, but his daughter, Rebecca, likes Trump, you know, family difficulties.
Did you guys notice the name of this guy?
Steve Bannon.
Who, do you know who else was named Bannon? I know his name is Bannon, but it's also Banning.
Agent Mike Banning?
Gerard Butler in Olympus Has Fallen.
Well, Trump like Gerard it. Butler in Olympus yes, Has Fallen yes. and outside of his film career, Steve Bannon likes to drink, and you can tell.
Yeah, he does.
So Steve Bannon apparently took over Breitbart, like I said, after Andrew was called home. Too good for this world.
To co-op.
Back to his home planet.
I didn't think it was possible. I never knew about this guy until today, and I'm so glad I know about him now. I didn't think it was possible, but they handed over the reins of Breitbart to a guy who looks even more physically unwell than Andrew Breitbart did.
Steve Bannon looks like a pile of dirty clothes that got brought to life by an evil wizard.
I want to disagree with the characterization of Andrew Breitbart as unhealthy looking. He was a man at peak physical condition who suspiciously died after doing 8 pounds of cocaine.
I'm looking at a picture of Steve Bannon right now, and he looks like if W.C. Fields also had a cocaine problem. He is in full gin blossom. And this is the best part. Every single photo I have seen of Steve Bannon today, it's like his signature style. He always wears 2 collared shirts. He's wearing a button-up shirt over a polo shirt. And then in several other pictures I saw of him, he's wearing a suit jacket and then 2 suit shirts, which apparently...
I don't understand.
I don't know. I'm told that this is like a Southern alcoholic thing where you just need like not even an undershirt. You need 2 full shirts to just soak up the booze sweats.
I think it's like a power thing. It's like if 1 shirt is powerful, 2 shirts must be twice as powerful as that.
Well, he's a force. This guy's a force of nature. Oh, and
it reminds me of like how girls in secondary school would wear 2 bras, like because they thought that made their tits look bigger or whatever. I think it's the same deal.
These shirts make his head look bigger. So, in looking into Steve Bannon, I came across today a profile of him from Bloomberg that was done in 2015 by Joshua Green. And it is great. But of course, because it's Bloomberg, the whole thing is shot through with this kind of naivete, where like Joshua Green, the guy who's writing it, the headline is, "This is the most dangerous political operative in America." Which I think is a bit of an oversell.
He's like a danger to himself.
Well, the whole thing kind of centers around that he was just getting into like publishing books, and he published the Clinton Cash book that was supposed to be a game changer. And he was like, "We finally have the goods. We finally have the goods on Hillary Clinton." And the article seems to take this very seriously. But there's some great color about the band man in this article, and I just want to give it a little bit to you now. I just want to read this passage from the Bloomberg profile, and I want to get your first reaction to this description of him. So it says, Bannon, an ex-Goldman Sachs banker, is the sort of character who would stand out anywhere, but especially in the drab environs of Washington. A mile-a-minute talker who thrums with energy, his sentences speed off ahead of him and spin into great pileups of nouns, verbs, and grins. With his swept-back blonde hair and okay, he doesn't have blonde hair. I don't know what they're talking
Wait
about.
Wait a minute, swept-back? I heard swept-back.
No, he said swept-back blonde hair and partiality to cargo shorts.
I'm still thinking it's swept-back.
His partiality to cargo shorts and flip-flops. He looks like Jeff Spicoli after a few decades of hard living, and he employs dude just as readily.
I wouldn't really say he looks like a slightly... I mean, Sean Penn looks like Jeff Spicoli after a few decades of hard living. He more looks like Jeff Spicoli after, like, a few thousand calories. But what property links this guy and Andrew? A certain thing that could make you talk a mile a minute and quote
thrum with energy.
Yeah, I'm trying to think. What do you guys think? I don't know. What could it be?
I actually think he looks a little bit like Andrew Breitbart, but like genuinely a reanimated Breitbart corpse. Like, they just took him straight out of the ground.
The greatest thing possible.
Yeah, absolutely.
I'm guessing that, like, Peter Thiel's, cloning vats have finally started to pump out viable specimens.
Pumped him full of the blood of, like, a sophomore girl, and he's fine.
Frankenfurtstein.
It says he comes from a blue-collar, Irish-Catholic, pro-Kennedy, pro-Union family, explaining his politics. But then he joined the Navy during the Carter administration and saw how effed up things had gotten. And, he came to Reagan. Throughout this article, I sort of get the feeling that Josh Green and, like, people who cover politics for Bloomberg or sort of in the D.C. environs, and maybe, Libby, you can give me some sense of this. I sort of feel like most of the people they interact with of a day are just so excessively square and buttoned down. When they come across some guy like this who wears three shirts at all times, thrums with energy, seemingly disregards his personal appearance and, like, cusses and says wild things, people are like, oh wow, this guy's he's different, he's dangerous, he's a genius, he must have something to say.
Right. No, I read most of that profile too, and yeah, that really struck me. Like, it is true that the someone who says dude a lot is kind of interesting by DC standards. Like, that's pretty much as like interesting and energetic as you're gonna get. And yeah, like, everyone here is fucking wearing slacks and, you know, the same blue shirt and the same fucking pleated pants. So yeah, if someone's wearing two shirts, then you're gonna notice them.
Bringing like the slightest sliver of personality or personal flair to DC is like going to an undiscovered tribe with a Zippo lighter. They're just like, the natives are awed by it. You must be a god.
And that's in the article, he describes about how he came out of the sort of the anti-Clinton 90s and the Trooper Gate and Vince Foster and all that, seemingly chastened by, he says the lesson that we should have learned, that we learned from that, is that you can't oversell the conclusion and you can't go too far. You got to, you have to really nail down the facts and, you know, do the hard work of reporting, which are the lessons that he applied to Breitbart.
No, I want to say also, talking of the 90s, there is an interesting bit in that article where Josh Green talks to David Brock, and I thought he said something like that Brock wasn't, it didn't act like he had a sort of ideological problem with Bannon, and in fact that he kind of respected him in a professional way, like that he, you know, like game recognized game, basically.
Right.
That he saw what Bannon was doing and kind of like, yeah, a curiosity and professional respect for the tradecraft Bannon demonstrated, because this is what Brock used to do. And, you know, I mean, Brock, whatever his conversion was, I don't know that it went that deep, so I'm sure he's not repulsed by his politics.
It's to Game of Thrones, it's the Brotherhood without banners, but in this case, it's the Brotherhood of Men with swept back hair, who thrum with energy at all times.
A lot of thrumming going on.
I would call it the Brotherhood without nasal cartilage. Brotherhood.
Sorry. Here's the quote. He says, in the 1990s, conservative media couldn't take down Bill Clinton because most of what they produced was punditry and opinion, and they always oversold the conclusion. It's clearly impeachable, so they wound up talking to themselves in an echo chamber. And he goes on to say that he loved Andrew because for Andrew, there is no dirtier word than pundit. But, like, it is a really interesting character profile, this guy, because, you know, once again, sort of like when we read the Rouse Duthout book, I, against my better judgment, I found myself having a weird affection for him, because in it, he talks about how he sort of got out of the Navy and then really just through luck and kind of blarney, you know, got into these series of, like, increasingly amazing jobs. Like, he describes he wanted to go to Harvard Business School and somehow he got in. And then he went to a Goldman Sachs, like, recruiting day where there were 600 people, and he thought, oh, fuck it, there's no way I'm going to get a job out of this, but ended up having a conversation about baseball with the son of the Goldman Sachs chairman of the board, who then got him hired, like, the next week or something like that. And then, most amazingly, he moves on from Goldman Sachs because he got disillusioned with Wall Street because it was too dishonest, I guess.
And that chairman's son's name was Dan McLaughlin.
But check this out. He actually, most of Bannon's money, and he is quite rich, all comes from the residuals from Seinfeld. He got into the entertainment industry because he sort of, like, again, lucked into this thing where he was going to broker a deal where Ted Turner was going to buy Castle Rock Entertainment, which had all these Billy Crystal movies. And then, as he said, in the runt of the litter in this deal was Seinfeld. And so he owns royalties to Seinfeld that are still paying off to this day.
Can you imagine, like, being lucky enough to just turn up at things like Goldman Sachs and fucking Seinfeld and, like, somehow end up making money off it, and then squandering that luck by running fucking Breitbart.com? And you have this gift from the Lord, where the Lord keeps giving you opportunities, and you use it to run stories about how black people are scary.
He has the luck of the Irish, and, like, but yeah, he's now cashing it in to be in the Trump bunker for the last days.
To get shot in the head.
Yeah, I just want to read here. It says, he wasn't even supposed to get the Seinfeld residuals. He was offered, this is almost a fuck up, they said, in lieu of a full advisor's fee, the firm he represented accepted a stake in 5 shows, including one in its 3rd season regarded as the runt of the litter, Seinfeld. And then it said, after Societe Generale bought Bannon and Company in 1998, Bannon, no longer needing a day job, dove into Hollywood moguldom, becoming an executive producer, including Anthony Hopkins' 1999 Titus. It was then he met a hard-partying talent manager who had discovered the band Korn and managed Backstreet Boys. As Bannon was selling...
I'm coming on, cut!
As Bannon was selling his company, the manager, this guy, was launching one of his own, a management an outfit called The Firm, whose clients included Ice Cube and Martin Lawrence.
Yo, you know when you eat your girl's ass and white values are being diluted by open borders?
But Bannon keeps saying over and over again that he wanted to get into, because he said, we have to change the culture as conservatives. We have to change the culture or else we're never going to win politics. And I guess this was something actually Andrew Breitbart did say over and over in his lucid moments. He would actually say it 30 times in a row through gritted teeth. But it was one of the more lucid things he said. But yeah, no, Bannon got into films and Seinfeld. And then, yeah, just sort of keeps bungling into these, like, blockbuster deals. And of which the Trump campaign is now, I think, his crowning achievement.
Yeah, I mean, where do you go after that, though? What's next?
I just...
He's going to bring back Seinfeld, only it's going to be, like, alt-right-feld.
It's going to sound...
They're 4 friends on the Upper West Side.
What is the deal with my people?
You know, Kramer is the only one that can return as he is.
I was going to say, it's about four friends on the Upper West Side of Manhattan who hate Jews.
Yeah.
And there are two sort of funny fallouts to this Steve Bannon thing. The first of which I just want to note, Steve Bannon, again, has been described as a quote unquote street fighter in multiple media outlets today. Felix, what do you think this guy's win in a fight is? Could you break it down?
All right. So, A lot of people will tell you the best base for combat is Muay Thai, like a very versatile striking art, or wrestling, because you can dictate where and how the fight takes place. Or, you know, I've even seen people say soccer, because it gives you great cardio and it opens up your hips. They're all wrong. The best base for fighting, the absolute best, is to be about 120 pounds overweight and addicted to cocaine.
You can't beat that cocaine surge, though. You can't beat it.
Moving on, I would say the other thing I really like about this Steve Bannon story is the hilarious fallout that it's causing among ex-Breitbarters, like friend of the show Ben Shapiro, and others who have been griping all day to say Andrew is rolling over in his grave about this. There would be tears in his eyes to know that his legacy is being used for such tawdry opportunism and racism. I mean, can you imagine?
Yeah, I mean, he never did anything like that.
Andrew actually is physically rolling over in his grave because he's still going through convulsions. It's kind of like a Churrasco-style rotisserie where Andrew is buried. But
I, for one, would just like to note again how funny it is that he's dead.
It's really funny.
It's the funniest thing ever.
It's so
world.
Funny.
It's very
Every
funny.
Time you remember that Andrew Breitbart is dead, it's a gift you give yourself.
It's both funny but incredibly good for the people who, like Ben Shapiro. No, I'm just saying it's good for me, but it's also good for people like Ben Shapiro, because Felix, as you said, the best part about him being dead is that all his friends can now lie about him and pretend that like there's some universe in which he would not have ridden Trump's coattails for all it was worth.
Yeah, Breitbart, if Andrew didn't die, Breitbart was probably gonna like launch a vertical called Thug Watch. It was going to be like Gawker Stalker, but it was just going to be like they were going to contract people to take pictures of sagging pants.
I can't work out what it is exactly that Trump does that they think he would object to. Like, I don't know what specifically it is that he does.
Libby, Trump's betrayal of true conservatism, which we all know Andrew Breitbart was a totally sincere tribune of.
Right.
Yeah, I mean, we all remember Andrew's crusades, editing videos to make black people seem like they're actually more racist than white people, screaming about rapists at Occupy Wall Street. What else? I mean, just like pure Burkean conservatism at its best.
I mean, Edmund Burke famously said, "All that is necessary for evil to triumph is for good men to get destroyed by inner city thugs in the knockout game."
Well, I just want to check in, like I said, with friend of the show Ben Shapiro, because he has described Steve Bannon as, quote, the most evil person that I know, which is almost certainly not true.
No,
look in the mirror, Ben.
This is definitely not true.
It's almost certainly not true. And if Ben Shapiro is willing to describe you as despicable, like I said, chances are you're in some way kind of a cool person. And I think we've sort of established that about Steve Bannon.
Steve Bannon is probably he's a piece of shit, but like, who would you actually have more fun hanging out with, Steve Bannon or Ben Shapiro? I think it's
you know what? I want to hang out with them both so I can watch Bannon be like doing like this racist Chris Farley thing, and Ben Shapiro's stupid bow tie spins around in outrage. That's what I want to see.
Well,
yeah, that would be fun. I like Bannon. I like alt-right Chris Farley. remember when he called all the Mexicans rapists? That was awesome.
Kind of sleeper cell is in the van down by the river.
I agree that he's probably more fun than Ben Shapiro, but there was a really disturbing detail again in that Bloomberg piece, which is that his house is decorated like Lincoln's house or something. Like he
has a portrait of Lincoln in his drawing room.
But then he also described it as like going back to the 1860s, as if it's all decorated like Lincoln's fucking powder room. And like, I think that's really disturbing. I think that betrays a really sick man in a very like deeply. I mean, there's obviously this weird conservative thing of like appropriating figures from history, you know, the founding fathers and Lincoln and stuff. But that takes it to a whole like creepy new sort of cosplay level.
It's like he's like that couple that only dress and live in the Victorian times, except he's swaggering through this like beautiful 19th century drawing room wearing Tommy Bahama shorts and like sweating through Oakley sunglasses.
And unlike Lincoln, he's trying to bring slavery back. So.
Yeah, it's true. It's true. Key difference. Also, Lincoln died when he caught a shot to the back of the head in a theater, whereas Bannon is probably just going to die due to a hot shot outside of a movie theater.
I do want to check in on Shapiro, because he had a whole storm of, he had a whole lot of thoughts about Steve Bannon that he, of course, was quick to share today. And I just want to read a little bit about Ben Shapiro on Steve Bannon, but in Ben Shapiro's voice. I'm going to attempt to do it now. Okay.
Steve Bannon turned Breitbart into Trump for his own personal gain. Back in March, I quit Breitbart News when it became clear to me that he had decided that loyalty to Donald Trump outweighed loyalty to their own employee.
Wait, he goes on, Trump's campaign strategy could be the launch of a new media outlet. Because Bannon's ambitions extend to Steve Bannon, he'll tell Trump he's doing a fantastic job, even if he isn't. That's how Bannon's Svengali political figures, investors. They invest in themselves and their personal genius and then hollow them out from the inside. That's what he did to Sarah Palin. She went from a legitimate political figure to a parody artist and a Trump endorser. That's what Steve Bannon does along every step of the way.
Sorry, did he say Sarah Palin was a legitimate political figure? Yeah. What the fuck happened to her? Oh, Jesus Christ.
And I did also see other people saying, again, this idea that Trump would be crying. I mean, I'm sorry, that Breitbart would be crying over any of this is hilarious, which is why it's good that he's dead, because they can get away with this kind of shit. It's sort of like how I think it's good that for conservatism that a lot of their heroes or people that are considered heroes in the popular culture are dead. Because they can continually lie about
absolutely.
Them. Not to get too conspiratorial, but I think actually one of the reasons Martin Luther King Jr. was assassinated was so that 40 or 50 years later, people like Glenn Beck and Andrew Breitbart could pretend that they would have marched on Selma with him.
You're right. And no, yeah, but I mean, the only person who's actually living up to Martin Luther King's legacy is Ron Fournier.
Moving on from Steve Bannon, I want to go on now to another guy who I think has been brutally overshadowed and now looks like even more of a Trump than he did at the beginning of the week. And I'm talking about the latest Never Trump nobody to now officially take the mantle of useless, quixotic, independent presidential bid to unseat Donald Trump and Hillary Clinton. I'm talking about this guy, Evan McMullen.
Yeah, baby.
What do you guys know about this dude?
He's a frickin' wonk, and it's about time America had a wonk president.
Evan McMullen, what does America love? TED Talks, Goldman Sachs, the CIA. Wow, it would be great if there was a candidate who is associated with all three of these things. Oh, wait, he exists, and he has a bulb-like head that is pleasurable to influence.
Felix, that's a good point, because unlike David French, who was the last guy to flirt with this, Evan McMullen has the benefit of looking like a human being. Like, he's not soul-chilling to look upon.
Yes, David French did look like a sloth. Yeah, David French looked like a sloth that was getting chemotherapy. But Evan McMullen looks virile. He actually looks like a vegetable. And that's really, speaking in sort of like the unofficial spokesman of high T voters, we had our chance with Martin O'Malley. He was kind of an Obama. he was going to be the first Jack president, but he sort of, people conspired to do Jack Nisswaj Noir to him, which is misogyny against Jack people. And he was unfairly cheated out of his win, as you can see in the DNC emails. But Evan McMullen is our next best shot.
It looks like, it definitely looks like he works out. And as we, yeah, like we said, he used to be in the CIA.
Hell yeah.
My joke when I first found out about this is that he, former CIA, former Goldman Sachs, who does TED Talks, like, if anyone, he's just going to take away votes from Hillary Clinton. I don't know if he will have any effect on this election at all. It's eating into her base, not Trump's. There's not a whole lot. I mean, his TED Talk was about genocide in Syria, and I'm not kidding. He had a PowerPoint presentation that included photos of, quote, industrial scale killing that he claimed was smuggled out of Syria. So he gave TED Talk.
Smash that download button on that one.
He gave the TED Talk version of like Night and Fog, basically, but about Syria. And he definitely wants us to get involved in Syria. He has a humanitarian foreign policy, is
finally
what I'm trying to say.
Finally, a candidate that will get us involved in Syria.
Yeah. But I wanted to check in on what the Never Trump diehards, how they're responding to Evan McMullen. And of course, I went to the National Review. Oh, wait, quick digression. Have you guys noticed that another show favorite, John Nolte of Breitbart, has changed his Twitter display name to Never Trump is Gay?
Yeah, man. I think that's pretty cool.
I mean, he's not wrong. Like Never Trump is like pejoratively gay. Like when people say that you shouldn't say things are pejoratively gay to mean that they're weak and stupid. And like, okay, like what is Never Trump but weak and stupid? But like, do better, John.
I took it literally. I mean, I think they are all actually. I think maybe they are all homosexuals.
I believe this man is a homosexual.
Do they have steak every night with their hot wife? I don't think so. No. Ben Shapiro spends his nights playing Dungeons and Dragons with his wife.
Not gay. David French and Ben Shapiro may have glory holed each other, but that was just to like get into the minds of liberal bathroom sickos. It's like you don't call a cop a criminal because he goes undercover, do you? Okay, just like, again, use logic.
So let's look at Never Trump here. This is from the National Review. This is by Josh Gerlernter. And this is about the headline here is how conservative candidate Evan McMullen can win.
okay, all right.
Now, guys, you left, but he knows he's not stupid. He knows he understands the reality. He says it's very, very unlikely, but new conservative independent candidate for president Evan McMullen can win, but only if he runs only in Utah. Bear with me, folks. Matt, you're in Utah right now.
I have to say, Mullenmentum is on the streets. I was in Temple Square earlier, and the talk was all about McMullen. McMullen, McMullen, McMullen. People are crazy for him.
Hell yeah.
This whole idiotic thing just goes down to some convoluted way in which the election will get thrown to Congress, and then he'll be appointed president or something like that. It's really stupid, but this is the best part. Gerlernter writes, if among swing states, Trump can win Florida, North Carolina, Ohio, and Pennsylvania. He'll have 273 electoral votes, three more than the 270 he needs to win. If he wins Florida, North Carolina, Virginia, and Iowa, he just goes through all these elaborate scenarios. I'm willing to say right now Trump will win none of those states.
Yeah.
No, apparently he's got like a 9-point, or Hillary has a 9-point or better advantage in states adding up to 273 electoral votes right now. He might not win anything.
Oh dear. Now, okay, we all know how stupid this is going to be, and like that they have to keep this flame flickering in their sort of like Miss Havisham like attic that they all apparently live in. But this is more interesting because it led me to this digression. Whenever I go to the National Review and I come across a name like Josh Gerlernter, I always have to go to the bio and see what his deal is. And this one is fairly bland. It said, Josh Gerlernter writes weekly for NRO and is also a regular contributor to the Weekly Standard. But it says, he is founder of a tech startup, Detach. And there's a link on Detach. And I said, aha, what is this? What do you guys think Detach, his tech startup, is a company that does what?
I think it's a castration startup. It means we're just getting those bloody balls chopped off.
I think it allows you to detach from urban communities through like Uber for security guards and like electrified fences.
I think I have it. It is, it's like an electric fence for dogs, but for wives, so that they can't go, they can't go to bars or restaurants that have a greater 6-to-1 male to female ratio if the husband is on deployment.
Ghost of boyfriend's pass.
It comes with an email blocker too, obviously.
Yeah, email blocker. Actually, email any other dude.
No, no, Matt. Ding, 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 ding. That is the closest email blocker. Okay, I went to Detach's website and clicked on the. What is Detach? I clicked about. Here is the spiel for Detach. It says finding attachments is hard. You've got gigabytes of stuff. You've got gigabytes of stuff stored in your email, buried and lost forever. Wouldn't it be nice if there was an easier way to find that work presentation, that tax document, that report from school, those photos from vacation 3 years ago? Now there is. Detach gives you a browsable, searchable feed of email attachments. Every file you send or receive appears in a beautiful visual interface, and you can forward, download, print, or post to social media direct from our app. Next time you spend more than 60 seconds finding an email attachment, remember, there's a better way. Detach. Can you fucking believe that this is real?
You know, at first I thought this is a painfully and awfully unnecessary product, but then I heard that the display is beautifully laid out, and now I'm sold.
This reminds me very strongly of, like, when I used to watch Fox News for a living, and, like, at least 50% of the adverts were about, like, services of internet for old people. There's this thing called HughesNet, and it's like, you can shop. You can talk to your family and stuff, and it's just like so obviously designed for people who have never learned how to double click on a mouse.
It's like it's like the Cinco product from Tim and Eric. That's the internet, but it's just on a CD-ROM. It's just a CD-ROM you put in your computer, and you're like, chat, talk,
detach.
Yeah, detach.
Exclusively available on the Jitterbug.
Guys, no, but seriously, don't you wish there was a way of searching your email inbox for documents that you sent?
It's kind of amazing.
I'm losing documents. I'm always losing documents. My wife is always like, what? I told you I was going to go on vacation with my chiropractor platonically. I sent an email to you, and I'm like, I don't believe you. And I can't search my email. I'm just unable to search my email, and she goes on vacation with him.
That is Detach and the state of Never Trump. Never Trump is gay. That is the state of Never Trump is gay. I think that's just the way we should call it from now on. Here's something that we should talk about. You might say, let's talk about. And I'm referring, of course, to the article on Wonkette this week by Rebecca Schoenkampf, a.k.a. Commie Girl 1, entitled... Let's talk about Juanita Broderick. Now, this article would have been better if it had just been followed up with the end of the article should have just said, let's not. And then they should have just published that and moved on. But no, actually, Rebecca went on at length about Juanita Broderick. By way of background, BuzzFeed did a big profile of Juanita Broderick this week in which she brings up... her claim that Bill Clinton raped her, which he has maintained for many years now. It's been out there for a long time, but of course he's back in the news, and she's becoming something of a, you know, she wants to get out there and tell her story to sort of counter the Clintons or whatever. And of course Wonkette felt the need to address this, you know, a tough issue for anyone to talk about. You know, I don't think we should get into whether you believe Bill Clinton raped anyone or not. You can draw your own conclusions based on the public record. But I don't know. This came up because something I did earlier in the year, I said, what's the most reactionary position we can get Clinton supporters to defend before the primary is over? And I guess the primary is over, so it doesn't really count anymore. But... basically, what Rebecca did in this article answered my question fairly convincingly, would you say?
Yeah. I'm rereading it again now, and, like, I'm getting mad. I'm getting mad online. It's actually quite infuriating.
It's a really bad article. It's really bad. And it's the kind of thing you can only write when you're the publisher of a website. Like, if anyone else had written this, it would have basically ended their career. But
sorry.
No, Libby, go ahead.
No, it's just, I mean, the thing about it is that, you know, the I guess the impulse is good to actually address the allegations rather than just ignoring it. That's fine. And she says some reasonably okay things, like that, you know, she understands why people would believe her, and, you know, she probably does, you know, could believe her. But then it seems that her conclusion is, but I don't care because it's Bill Clinton. I don't care because, I mean, she says, I can see your nice grandpa doing that back then. I mean, isn't that the whole fucking point about, like, the discussion about rape culture these days, is that things were different back then, and that we're supposed to put the critical lens that we have on it now back on stuff that, you know, they didn't have the same...
consciousness.
Exactly, yeah. They didn't understand as much about it then. So, like, it's the most backwards way of looking at it. It would never be applied to anyone else. That standard would never be applied to anyone else. It is just because it's Bill Clinton and because she likes Hillary Clinton. It's unbelievable.
Look, I've seen a lot of people criticizing Rebecca
Schulman. Just say Commie Girl 1. Commie Girl 1.
Okay, Commie Girl 1. Aka
Do you think the original Commie Girl is pissed off that this has happened?
She's definitely. Look, first of all, I want to talk about this article's good points. One, she forgave Bill Clinton on behalf of Juanita Broderick. This shows a lot of personal growth and maturity that Rebecca forgave Bill for raping another person. This is kind of, you see why she's the editor and other people are just writers. There's like kind of a maturity that comes with that job. Two, this also shows maturity because if you read Rebecca's other articles, they're like, the LOL cat fail win Jill Stein epic fails. Can I has a Supreme Court justice?
She called
justice,
Jill Stein a cunt. Called
Jill Stein
week.
A cunt, but it's like mostly like talking about like Supreme Court nominations in LOL cat language. So
it's
like,
in that Wildcat House style. Here is how Rebecca introduces her thoughts on what is, you know, a very sensitive issue. She writes, "Here are a few quick thinkerings."
Oh, God.
Okay, yeah, all right.
So painful.
Whenever I read that, I think, I want to keep reading this person.
I actually want to read this.
They've established trust that they, they've established trust that they're not a moron.
They're going to treat this very sensitive.
And that they have something that I want to know.
They're going to treat this very sensitive issue with the respect and thoughtfulness that it deserves.
Yeah, it gets really weird later on when she says it doesn't even necessarily make him a bad feminist. You know, later once he stops doing that.
Okay, we just need to quote this in its entirety because it's extraordinary. She writes, "To sum up, I think Bill Clinton could very well have raped Juanita Broderick. That doesn't make him an evil man or irredeemable." And then in parentheses, she says, "I'm Catholic. We're all forgiven if we're sorry." And Broderick says that Bill Clinton personally called her up to apologize. It goes on. "It doesn't even necessarily make him a bad feminist."
Agreed.
"You know, later, once he stops doing that."
Okay. So does that mean that once you stop raping a person, like once you finish the act of raping a person, you then can go back to being a feminist? Like, is that what that means?
Well, if you apologize and don't do it again.
If you apologize,
I think there's like a decent interval, like maybe 6 weeks. You know, especially if you give a little money to Nara,
right, it has to leave your bloodstream.
And you
like,
amplify if you amplify a woman's voice,
right. You know, if you think
about bloodstream like THC, and then you're a feminist again.
I'm glad Libby said that. Being a feminist is kind of like a steroid cycle. You can do like 6 weeks of feminism, which is like doing 6 weeks of Tren, Clem, or Nandrolone. And you get all the gains, which gains in this case equal empathy. Now, you get off the cycle. And when you're off the cycle, you may rape Juanita Broderick. But when you get back on, you still have some of those gains. So you can easily get back on that cycle and you still continue your path of gains or feminism or empathy.
What is so weird to me about that passage is that she touches on this idea about like Catholicism, that like we're all sinners and can be forgiven. Which is like this germ of an idea that like okay, that people who have committed heinous crimes are not necessarily irredeemable, that like they can find grace or some kind of redemption in their life even though they've done a terrible thing. I think that that's like a legitimate moral point of view. However, if you rape someone, or as she said, I'm fairly certain he did, wouldn't you basically just have to write them off morally, or like as any kind of like moral exemplar or leader for the rest of their life? Certainly, right?
And also, like, personally calling her up to apologize.
Yeah, who gives a shit?
Yeah, I mean, exactly. Who gives a shit? And also, it's one thing if you're just, if you were just like at college together, but he was the fucking president. Like, I think that also has to include like being, you know, public about it. Maybe like addressing it in public and not just doing the whole little bit nutty, little bit slutty thing. I mean, you like him calling her up and being like, "Oh, my bad," is no good if he doesn't then, you know, go on NBC and say, "Oh, my bad." You know, it doesn't. Yeah. It's not the same fucking standard at all.
I mean, it's sort of like if Bill Clinton, if he did it today, he would have like written an apology on Pastebin or notes and screenshotted it and like made it his pinned tweet and been like, "Follow these wonderful gals." And then Rebecca would have Rebecca would have been like, "Good enough for me, Bill."
He would have, she would have retweeted it, and that would have been fine.
But yeah. I mean, it's just I didn't think it, I think I would have thought it would be a crude and stupid parody a month ago. If you had said, like, Hillary Clinton feminist would have said, Bill can rape someone and technically still be a good feminist. But here we are.
No, I was going to say, it's weird because, you know, I've read other Clinton supporters kind of dealing with the Broderick thing. There was Amanda Marcotte back in January, and there's, you know, Eric Bollett has written about it too. But they never go as far as to say, yeah, he did it, but it's fine if he did now. You know, they always just, you know, go with the whole world is unproven, or, you know,
I seem to remember Amanda not believing what she said. We don't need a Broderick was too close to all these right wing operatives who tried to take advantage of her. So, I mean, Amanda Marcotte came very close to saying, "I don't believe her."
Well, she said it was thoroughly investigated in the 90s. There is simply no evidence one way or another to tell if it was a sincere accusation or yet another incident of a wild-eyed Clinton hater.
Okay. Wild-eyed.
Not all rape allegations are the same, she says.
Thank you, Amanda. I mean, the person that I look to evaluate the criminal justice system through Clinton derangement syndrome is the woman who willfully got a ray gun tattooed on her arm forever.
Stop. That's doxing. Do not do that.
I'm sorry. I'll do better. Do that, so, Noah Berlansky, I'm sorry.
So, again, Rebecca said, let's talk about Juanita Broderick. Rebecca, let's not. You really shouldn't have talked about Juanita Broderick. You really should have kept these thoughts to yourself. So yeah, we should have done this story last because there's actually no way to segue out of it. But let's talk about freedom in America. Let's talk about the state of freedom in these 50 states, yes, in this American life. And I'm referring, of course, to the Cato Institute's annual Freedom in the 50 States ranking of all the 50 states by the policies that shape personal and economic freedom.
Gotta love it, brother.
Gotta love it, brother.
Cato Institute, really exciting to be able to look up how free you are in one easy place.
Now, I am broadcasting from New York State. Let's look this up real quick on the map. Hold on a second. What? Ranking overall 50, New York is the least free state in the country again?
I'm gonna fucking kill myself.
We smuggle Chapo out of the state on like a microfilm every week.
Yeah.
It's like East Berlin.
Me and Will are making a seastead.
I'm looking down.
You need to read their policy recommendations for New York.
Yes,
the policy recommendations are incredible. I mean, New York being 50th is one thing, but their recommendations for making it just that little bit more free are to cut spending on hospitals, housing, libraries, public welfare, sanitation, and
double
sewerage.
Check. Double check.
Public transit, employee retirement, and miscellaneous.
Don't
get that stuff out of there.
I,
All those people with no access to healthcare and housing are going to be free as hell.
So if you're wondering why you felt so unfree in New York, it's that your shit is whisked away from you by your toilet. That's what's making you feel so damn oppressed.
Libby, I'm looking at the policy recommendations and I'm thinking to myself, I've lived in New York City my entire life, and if there's one thing I've had too much of, it's sanitation, sewage, and public transit. We spend way too much money on all of those things. If we just turned it over to the private sector, we would be living in a utopia, or at least a less
coin-operated toilets.
It's fucking oppressed by make it libraries.
What do they have against libraries? How much money are we spending on libraries?
I don't know.
$8 billion a year.
Any money is too
libraries
much.
Libraries are by definition just an affront to them because you go there and they give you a book for free. It just, their brain short circuit. They can't process
there, yeah, there are barely no Barnes & Nobles left in New York either. That's also terrible. You can't even pay for books anymore.
We spend $80 billion a year on libraries in Brooklyn alone. If you add it up to the entire city, in the state of New York spends $2 trillion on libraries every year. If you just uncock the tax disbursements, you have to uncock the data. Do the math. Okay. How many kids are there in New York? 500 million. We have to pay a tax per kid of $2 a year. Add that up. How much is that? That's $1 trillion. And then they give you a processing fee, which is $1. That's $2 trillion. We're paying $2 trillion for all these libraries so the kids can rent Beetleborgs comic books? No, thank you.
Libby, I'm also looking at the policy recommendations here, and it also says abolish rent control. Yes, yeah. If there's one thing I'm oppressed by absolutely in New York City, it's the ability to afford the apartment I live in. It's the most crushing form of oppression that I face is being able to pay rent in New York City.
Yeah, I'm pretty disgusted that your landlord doesn't have the ability to charge, you know, $7,000 for a closet. That's, you know, that's his right as an American to do that.
If I was a landlord.
If they got rid of it, every building would have like 15 doormen who all knew Hamilton by heart and rapped it for you every time you came home.
It says one more. It'd be amazing. One more prescription. It says slash tobacco taxes, which are so high as to be almost tantamount to prohibition. Now, I know, Felix, you feel me on that one, right?
I actually get the cigarettes without tax stamps, and if they lowered them, then I would be probably paying like $10 a pack, and I pay $8 a pack, and because it would take out the incentive to break the law, so actually keep them very high. So I keep getting without tax stamps.
I have lived in New York my entire life, and we need more people smoking, less public transportation, and sort of like a la carte public services like sewage, fire, and...
Uber for shit. Yeah, that sounds good.
That I can agree with. That I can totally agree with.
The tobacco tax thing reminds me of so when I worked at Media Matters, it was when Eric Garner was killed, and Sean Hannity's argument about that was that Eric Garner wouldn't have died if it weren't for tobacco taxes, because the fact that tobacco taxes are so high meant that he was selling Lucy's, and if he wasn't selling Lucy's, then he wouldn't have been strangled to death by a cop. And he had this guy on his radio show to talk about how Texas is the most free state because it has no taxes or whatever. Mm. And his big thing was that like tobacco taxes killed Eric Garner. So it's clearly like...
And black people are not killed in Texas ever. It's like the police.
Never.
It's amazing.
Never
you look at the statistics.
I'm going through the Freedom in 50 States map as well. I'm looking at North Carolina right now, which is ranked 19.
Free as hell.
So they have some work to do, but... it's funny, I don't see anything in the policy recommendations about letting trans people use the bathroom.
Well, there are some very interesting things missing from... I do want to talk about how it's calculated. So one huge thing that's missing from their weighting of things is abortion. They don't include abortion at all. It's just, and there's actually a footnote in the report about how, you know, they've like calculated it with abortion if you want to do it yourself, if that's important to you, you know, if you're like one of the literally millions of women who's had an abortion. But other things that do feature include trans fat bans, that gets 0.1%. Whether raw milk is legal is a thing that factors into their calculations. Prostitution, physician-assisted suicide. But the one that really caught my eye was under personal freedom, cousin marriage is one of the things that they consider.
When nobody is talking about this.
No one's talking about this.
So wait, what state has the highest freedom in terms of cousin, the ability to marry your first cousin?
I haven't actually looked. I don't know if it allows you to break it down by that. But it's, I think...
It's got to be West Virginia, right?
You would think, yeah. But it really, I need to point out that, so they tell you like what percentage they give to each of these things. And so like, you know, drug enforcement rate is 1.4%, for example, or, you know, public school choice is 0.1%. Cousin marriage is 0.4%. So cousin marriage is four times as important in terms of freedom as the ability to choose your kid's school. It's also more important than a waiting period for gun purchases, firearms licensing index, initial permit limit, you know, all these things that to them...
Wait a second. This whole libertarian thing is just a big smokescreen for a couple guys to fuck their cousins.
Yeah. Yeah, pretty much.
It's kind of beautiful if you think about it.
Yeah. Oh, also, by the way, cousin marriage...
You know, have you ever been to a Coke family reunion? It gets fucking wild around the punch bowl, yo.
Sorry, one
cousin
more thing.
Cousin marriage is also weighted exactly the same as sodomy laws. So if you're forbidden from having anal sex, that's the same amount as fucking your cousin.
What about sodomizing your cousin? That's the freest... That is the freest you can be.
That's freedom squared.
Sodomizing your cousin with trans fats is the freest you can be.
Sorry, one more digression about New York. I came back to New York, which is ranked the least free state in America. Cato also says, New York's criminal justice policies are reasonably decent. But looking at the overall map, and we were talking about this a little before, It's interesting, like I said, New York and California are rated as the least free states in America. The most free states in America, these are the states with the highest ranking of overall freedom, are Alaska, Oklahoma, South Dakota, and Indiana. Of those states...
amazing states.
Of those states, Indiana is basically the only one where people actually live, but is also an absolute shithole.
It's a shithole. I drive through that thing like once a month, and it's the most godforsaken shit realm on earth. It's called the Crossroads of America. Its motto literally is an admission that people drive through it to get somewhere more interesting.
Indiana invented a little thing called racism.
They did have the largest Klan movement in the 20s. So kudos there.
They didn't invent the Klan. They invented the Klan. Don't you feel silly now?
But basically, they rate all these states as being the most free because there is the least taxation and the least regulation on business. But, of course, we know the irony that they are among the least populated states in America, and the states where basically anyone actually wants to live and work are all the least free, according to Cato. So, what to make of this irony, if you are a libertarian? How do you process this?
Shut up! People are sheeple. They're just sheeple.
But Matt, you made the point that like in Cold War propaganda, it was like a knock on the Soviet Union that everyone wanted to come to America for democracy, whiskey,
yeah, it was
sexy,
all, they always
jeans.
Say like, you're voting with your feet, you know?
And they wanted to come to the
people
West.
People do vote for their feet and they want less freedom. People march towards the sound of regulation and of government spending
and public,
that's what
and public transportation.
But that's because libertarianism is brutally unpopular, and that's the big joke at the heart of the whole thing. It's very high profile because there are a number of crazy old rich assholes who are very interested in making it popular and are willing to spend a lot of money on it. But it's just a thing that nobody actually cares about. Nobody is intuitively interested in it. Nobody, when you explain what it would mean to their lives, wants to get on board. And that's just a reality that none of them can confront.
Right. I mean, this is the thing. They keep talking about economic freedom in this thing. They keep talking about how they're calculating economic freedom, but that's not really what economic freedom means. Like, economic freedom means, you know, that you are able to feed your children, you know, like that you are able to live and, you know, not die, I guess.
Excuse me, ma'am, but I believe you're referring to positive liberty, positive liberty is a chimera and a road to serfdom. The only true liberty is negative liberty. Good day, madam.
Oh, my God, is that Bobby Soul's music?
I actually don't believe anything. Never mind.
By God, it is Robbie Suave.
I just want to... They're hiring.
I just like Reason pays guys. Me.
I don't really have any core beliefs of any kind. I just like hanging out with Ben Dreyfuss and going to have epic cocktails at DC's hottest clubs. And wearing a lanyard every day of my life. I don't actually care about anything.
Libby, I'm looking again at the how it's scored. Under labor market freedom, they give negative points for paid family leave.
Oh my God, the tyranny of being able to go home and take care of your kid when you have a child. Right. I could be working, and you're making me stay home.
Get that shit out of there.
I leave this child at home to suckle on the dog. It was good enough for Romulus and Remus. It'll be good enough for my strong son Thaddeus. And let me get back out there and make money like I'm supposed to, like I want to. Because I'm free.
Wow, I would really hate to give my child abandonment issues and to keep them from becoming a successful sexually repressed playwright. Morons.
They have this huge thing as well about occupational licensing. They seem to think that occupational licensing is like the greatest threat to personal liberty.
Oh my God, Will
Much
Wilkinson.
Like Matthew Iglesias and
Will Wilkinson wrote a huge piece of it in Vox about that.
Well, that's a Iglesias thing too. It's for all of the libertarians who don't want to get on board with like the Hans Hermann Hoppe, you know, blood and soil, you know, moats and castle keeps and napalm baths for the poor. Right. They don't want to get on board with that. So they're like, you know, we should make being a barber easier.
Right, but like, because, the thing is like,
but they can still cash the checks. That's the important thing.
Right, because like, I mean, I think like the poster child for this cause is like people who work in salons, like people who, you know, manicurists and stuff. But some of the occupations that they want to deregulate in Nevada include opticians, childcare workers is something I really do not want to deregulate. I'm really happy with as many regulations as possible on that. Clinical laboratory technologists, pharmacy technicians, taxi
Libby,
drivers.
Wait, Libby, what you're saying to me is that you don't want poor people to have access to affordable childcare and medicine. That's what you're saying. That's what you're saying.
It's one or the other. One or the other. It's either
typical bloody Tory. She's a bloody Tory.
Is this Margaret Thatcher?
She's Thatcher.
I'm Theresa May, mate.
We got Thatcher on the show. It's bloody shambles.
But Libby, your point about how abortion doesn't feature anywhere on the ranking, I think I'm looking on the personal freedom and like the typical libertarian thing where they're like, hey, we don't think people should be thrown in jail for drugs. Hey, it's cool to be gay. You know, Defense of Marriage Act is wrong. But all these things are essentially, I know women go to jail too, but these are very male. It's just like, it speaks to how male-oriented the libertarian worldview is, that nothing related to the being a woman features in this at all.
Right. Well, actually, something I need to point out as well that I think Felix will appreciate is if you download the PDF version, there's like a little acknowledgement at the front. It says, to Jennifer and Mary, our respective partners in life, mothers of our children, and two who sacrificed countless nights and weekends for this fourth edition. I really feel like they shouldn't have bothered. They shouldn't have sacrificed those nights.
Yeah, you should probably have been raising your kids instead of the fourth edition, but I think like a big part about being a parent is doing things then regretting
them. I feel like their kids, you know, the mothers of our children, they say, I feel like their kids are going to be asking, you know, Jennifer and Mary, like, you know, why isn't daddy coming to my little league game? And it's like, well, he's calculating the effect of occupational licensing in Nevada on the personal liberty of people who live there. Like,
he's got to figure out if North or South Dakota is more free. He's been up weeks on that.
The other occupation in Nevada that needs to be deregulated and deprofessionalized is, of course, prostitution.
Oh, right. Absolutely.
Boing. Auga.
Please do not oppress anybody's boners. That would be the worst thing you could do.
So that's the state of freedom in America. Everyone, you know, and this goes back to like the National Review, like Kev Williams, J.D. Vance, moral crisis in the white working class thing. in these depressed communities move to freer states like South Dakota.
Indiana's doing great. They only had a giant outbreak of HIV last year.
Yeah,
they're doing fantastic.
Yeah, move to New Hampshire. You can be free as you like and probably die of an opiate addiction. It's pretty
nice. Also, amazing. If you're a woman,
there's nothing freer than that.
If you're a single woman who's like sick of the dating scene and all these whack ass fuck boys, move to Alaska where there are 10 to 1 men for every woman.
It'll Dude, be the Alaskan dating, Tinder has got to be great.
It will be the dating scene of your dreams.
If I was a woman, I would definitely be getting some tundra dick right now in Alaska.
That's what, you know, people say, what do women want? They want economic freedom. They want economic and personal liberty.
And that dick.
Thank you, Cato Institute. So, that about does it for this week's show. But Livvy, before we go, we just alluded to it briefly. Theresa May, the bloody new PM. Give us your thoughts real quick.
She's shit. That's really all. That's really all I have to say.
What a load of bollocks!
Yeah,
she's bringing greatness back to Downing Street, mate. I'm bloody chuffed.
Hold on, wait, guys.
We're the most feminist nation in the G8 now,
guys.
We're feminist as all hell, mate. It's amazing. It's bloody brilliant,
guys. I am getting the Chapo phone line is ringing right now. You won't believe this.
Who do we got? This we got green light.
We got Teresa.
No, this is Arthur Chu? Should I put him on?
Oh, shit, it's Arthur Chu.
I also have to leave the room for a reason. Hi, this is Arthur Chu. I don't agree with her plan to put all Muslims in a habit trail, but I think it's cool that she's a woman, and I especially like her footwear choices. Okay, I'm going away now.
Well, so how was that, guys? How was...
You missed Arthur Chu, Felix.
It was amazing. You missed Chu, dude. It was awesome.
It was probably our biggest get.
Yeah. It's fucking IBS.
He was only here for 10 seconds.
I always have IBS when the big guests call in. This happened when Lin-Manuel Miranda called in. This is fucking
bad.
You have
IBS induced by your phone ringing?
Yeah, I do.
Anytime your phone rings, you just really want to shit everywhere.
It's a Pavlovian response. And then once more, Libby, before you go, can you say barbecue food?
Oh, Jesus. I mean, it helps me if I can say it in a context. Can you give me it in a sentence?
Hey, what's your favorite American dish, Libby? What do you like to eat here in the USA?
It's barbecue food.
Smashing, mate. I like a cheeky Nando's myself, but that's good too.
I'll see you at Nando's, Matt.
Okay. We gotta let Libby go. She's gotta top up her bloody mobile.
Thanks, guys.
We'll talk to you again soon. Libby, thanks so much for coming on.
Anytime. Thanks for having me.
Bye, Libby. Bye, everybody.
Bye. I walk down Main, trying to bomb a dollar to get me some cocaine. I crave cocaine, but I can't find nothing here in Atlanta. Back down to South Georgia.